a foreign land to take life on earth to the second birth, and the man was in command. It was a flight on the wings of a young girl's dreams that flew too far away. Don't push too far, your dreams are China in your hand. Don't wish too hard because they may come true and you can't have them. You don't know what you might have set upon yourself. Yeah, yeah. China in your hand. Come from greed, never born on the sea, took life from a barren land.
Always thought it might be a useful backing track at the British Library if you ever wanted to have a complete rave out there with each to the beat, especially when you have that awesomely talented food historian extraordinaire Polly Russell with us. How are you, Polly?
I'm very well. I'm going to put that to my superiors.
It's a thought, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, upbeat, up tempo, eat to the beat, a whole range of things there. It takes us through Heinz celebrating 150 years just needlessly, almost seamlessly, we might well say. Anyway, Polly, let's talk a little bit about this amazing thing that Heinz, 57 varieties, 150 years. Who'd have thought it, eh?
Yeah, it's really fascinating because we've been sort of delving into the archive, thinking about this 150-year anniversary. And, you know, the thing that's really struck me is that, on the one hand, the sort of story of food in Britain over that period of time is one of radical transformation, you know, huge new availability of foods, the sort of...
chicken tikka masala was an unknown phrase back in those days.
Yeah, chicken tikka masala was definitely an unknown phrase. And, you know, really well into the sort of 50s, even 60s, you know, garlic was regarded with quite a degree of suspicion in this country. You know, so really quite, for a lot of time, quite conservative taste for lots of people. So there's been this kind of radical transformation in our diets. That's absolutely clear. And yet, some things remain really consistent. And one of those is that people still seek out products which are, you know, that they feel that they can trust, that have quality. And this is a kind of key concern that we all have around the foods that we eat, of course. And that was really what Henry Heinz tapped into in the 1860s, 1870s, and through this period of time in order to sell his products. Because what he tried to do was not just sort of produce food, you know, food that was more convenient for people. What he did was he sold his first products in glass jars, and he did that so that people could see the product, could see that it looked, you know, safe, that it was good quality. Because this is a period of, you know, a lot of kind of food adulteration, food production not being safe. And so right back 150 years, this is a key concern, and it's something that food producers, manufacturers, and someone like Heinz tries to address.
Certainly the points you actually make there in terms of the quality issue and so on. I mean, we're in the middle of just starting off our coverage of the seasons of country shows, etc. We were tasting gourmet Scotch eggs yesterday, amongst other things, which were fascinating. Well, you'll have to sign up with William Sitwell and join us on one of our packages from that point of view, okay? That's what we must work through, Polly. But if Fortnum & Mason hadn't actually decided to be the UK's first stockist of, indeed, Henry John Heinz's innovative American food products, maybe history would have turned out completely differently.
Yeah, you know, that's a really good question, because I think perhaps part of the reason that Heinz products got a foothold and got a real reputation was because, I mean, Henry Heinz was a genius marketer. He really understood kind of brands and how to sell. And I think by selling into a luxury retailer like Fortnum & Mason, first of all, so baked beans, tomato ketchup, soups being available at Fortnum & Mason, he associated that brand with something that was kind of extravagant, luxury, aspirational. But very quickly, because the market at Fortnum & Mason's will be very limited, very quickly, the sort of, once it's been established as a brand, as something that people desire, that you see those products start to be sold much more widely to a mass market. So that by the 1920s, Heinz started producing baked beans, for example, in their state-of-the-art factory in Harlesden in London, and is advertising Heinz beans to be sold to the sort of urban poor factory workers. And there are these fabulous adverts, sort of like posters, leaflets, of there's a sort of steaming bowl of beans, and then behind the beans, pouring out of a factory are the kind of these hundreds of workers all coming towards this kind of nutritious, warm, inexpensive, easy to prepare food stuff. And so you see that a product that's been associated with luxury then becomes associated with sort of solving the problem of feeding urban working population.
And I think if memory serves, John Grierson, one of the early documentary filmmakers, was working for the Crown Film Unit promoting the advantageous qualities of fish and chips at that stage as well, really. So clearly nutrition and workforce very much at the heart of things from that point of view. Let's dial up 150 years into the future. The vegans effectively run the planet completely. Will it be a case of we've got a whole different area and people look back over this particular period in time thinking, well, baked beans will still be there, but other than that, who knows what our food tastes will develop into?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the concerns that we have now about food safety, quality, being able to trust food, wanting to have interesting, varied diets. So those things aren't going to change. I think now we've got this kind of new questions about kind of environmental concerns, and so that you see the kind of rise of veganism around that. So I think there's no doubt that the way that we produce food and the food that we eat will change, but many of the drivers will remain the same as they have been for, you know, 150 years. You know, the need to be fed, but to be fed well, is consistent kind of across sort of, you know, across kind of...
We need our food.
Yep.
Undergraduates need their beans on toast. That's
well,
another
that's
whole
never
market.
Change,
exactly. These are critical factors of the whole sort of system from that point of view. Any particular areas where, I mean, we had a great debate about stotty cake and black pudding, of course. I mean, that's something which seems to very much still divide folk in terms of people who actually say, no, I can't possibly take congealed blood or whatever. Are there things like that which might sort of reemerge? I mean, I recall a few years ago, the late Magnus Pike was on a mission to get us all to eat more fried locusts. And I've spoken about that at length, that maybe, you know, we need to be consuming insects more regularly.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, when we say something like, oh, you know, I don't like black pudding, or, you know, we won't eat locusts, actually, there's every possibility that we will be eating insects in some sort of form. And I say that because, you know, humans are incredibly adaptable. We do change. Our tastes have changed radically, like we said before. You know, it would have been unthinkable, even sort of 50 years ago, that we would eat the range of foods that we do now, that olive oil, that garlic, that, you know, all these kind of products which are now just part of the everyday palate would be so ubiquitous. And so it's entirely possible that we will adopt totally new foodstuffs. And, you know, don't forget, millions, in fact, probably billions of people across the planet do eat insects, and they're very nutritious and all sorts of things. So it seems really weird, but it's quite possible it might happen.
Well, just as long as we don't go down the silent green line of manufacturing food made out of humans, which would be not good at all, really, from that point of view. It's a dreadful sort of notion. Polly, there are so many things we could actually talk about and discuss, and we really must invite you back on to, say, have a head-to-head with our regular weekly correspondent, William Sidwell, because
that would be fun.
We must talk about that.
Yeah.
But let's get briefly back to Heinz. Where can people go to find out further information about the whole brand of 150 years, and so on and so forth?
Yeah, there's lots about the really interesting history at heinz.co.uk.
Fairly straightforward. And of course, your column in the Financial Times, frankly, it's awesome. Without which, you just,
you.
One's life is just a little bit less full from that point of view, from that perspective. Polly, it's been fantastic. Two final questions. Have you had a reasonably interesting and nutritious telephonic link with us this morning?
It's been incredibly nutritious, and I want more, though.
Well, in an audio nutritious sense, of course. I take it then you'll be kind enough to return and speak to us again in the very near future?
Anytime.
coming up on Southside Broadcasting, following Flute Historian, it's too long a day, Polly Russell. Thanks, Polly. We will be talking to Alan Stubbs, former Bolton Wanderers defender and indeed Everton defender, also played for Celtic, about a very interesting story involving his survival of testicular cancer. That, together with the Blue Ribbon Foundation, and following that, the notion of celebrations, is just coming up on Southside Broadcasting. We also have the joy of welcoming back to the studio Ace Soul from Northallerton. That, of course, is the wonderful Emily Huntley. How are you, Emily?
Good morning. I'm great, thank you.
Except it's Emily Hartley, isn't it?
No, yeah.
It's been a long drive up from Lincoln.
Friday night, I'm going nowhere. All the lights are changing, green to red. Turning over TV stations, situations running through my head. Looking back through time, you know it's clear that I've been blind. I've been a fool to open up my heart to all that jealousy, that bitterness, that ridicule. Saturday, I'm running wild, and all the lights are changing, red to green. Moving through the crowds, I'm pushing, chemicals are rushing in my bloodstream. Only wish that you were here, you know I'm seeing it so clear. I've been afraid to show you how I really feel, admit to some of those bad mistakes I've made. And if you want it, come and get it, crying out loud. The love that I was giving you was never it.
And something which certainly shouldn't be in doubt was the quality that Alan Stubbs actually brought to the world of football when he was actually playing for Celtic, for Everton, for Bolton Wanderers. He was a legend. My word, Alan, they could do with you these days in all sorts of ways at Bolton, but let's not go there. Good morning, Alan Stubbs. How are you?
Good morning.
Excellent. And, of course, about this particular story, we also welcome Jonathan Prince, MBE, from the Blue Ribbon Foundation. Good morning, Jonathan.
Good morning, Alex.
Excellent. Let's talk to Alan first, if we may. Alan, this particular story, we trailed it ahead earlier in the day about British men not going to the doctors enough. Your own particular survival from testicular cancer was pretty much only due to a post-match drug test.
Yeah, it was. When I always talk about my story, you know, people go, you know, how unlucky was you? Mm. And I look at them and go, you must be kidding.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was so lucky that I was, first of all, a professional footballer, and I was lucky to be able to be getting looked after as well as what we were. You know, and that obviously resulted in me having a random routine drug test after the cup final. In Scotland, and it proved potentially to have saved my life, really.
Now, there'll be many Mercedes-Benz van drivers who would have been massive supporters of your time at Everton, Sunderland, the whole range. I mean, Bolton, Celtic, Everton, Derby. You haven't played for my own beloved Manchester City, but apart from that, all's well with the world. You know, I'm sure Kevin Keegan would have signed you if he could have had the chance, but what the heck. But in terms of actually going through that process of staying healthy when you're behind the wheel, if we can turn to Jonathan, this particular survey in which there's a distinct lack of healthy eating options, we've got problems from that point of view. You know, we men are not doing very well when it comes to checking these things out, are we?
Well, Alan, we men, and we have to generalise here, don't do health.
That's very true.
We tend to have a bit of a manana complex.
Yeah.
We'll sort it next week. Now, if you think of Mercedes-Benz van drivers, they are busy people. They're having to get their deliveries in through the day. They sit in a car. They are tempted to eat fast food because it's easier, drive-ins, all sorts of places.
Mm.
And what they're saying to us is, we'd like some healthy options, but it's not there. It's not there in the roadside places where they stop. It's much easier to go and get fast food or food that is full of fat or full of red meat. So we're very conscious of those drivers are actually asking, and the Mercedes-Benz research show that they're actually asking, can we get healthier food quicker, faster, because we live a busy life and we'd like to get home at a sensible time as well.
And likewise, presumably, again, returning to Alan, I mean, you're obviously a professional athlete, you're working through that, presumably dietary was worked through that. You need to get the balance between getting yourself checked out and working through that, because there is that tendency to say, I don't want to go to the doctor, I'm okay.
Yeah, it's, you know, I think with a lot of men, you know, and we don't want to categorise to say it's all men, but the majority of them, there is a real macho bravado-ness about them to say, don't really want to go to the doctors and talk to them about testicles or the health. It's not something I feel comfortable talking about. And, you know, we're talking about saving lives here.
Mm.
We're not talking about, you know, your conscience and feeling a little bit uncomfortable. We're talking about saving lives. And the quicker that we can diagnose if you do have, you know, something wrong, you know, the better chance you have of coming through it. You know, when I was diagnosed, you know, at that point, there was a 95% success rate if diagnosed and caught early. You know, testicular cancer now, it's at 98%. You know, so it's the figures, you know, back up that if you go and speak and it's diagnosed early enough, you have got a very, very good opportunity to come through this. And that's the message that we're trying to drive home to, you know, to more so with this obviously survey, you know.
I love the line drive home. It's a wonderful pun. You've just slipped it in there effortlessly. Fantastic. Yeah. Drivers drive home all the way. Let's turn to one of our studio guests. That's Emily. Emily, you've been listening to Alan, you've been listening to Jonathan, etc. I know you're a Manchester United supporter. Let's not go there. any questions you'd like to put to either gentleman?
I was just wondering, like, why do you think that men struggle with going to the doctors? Is it just like a front they put on, or because obviously some women don't want to go to the doctors either? Like, I know I put it off a lot, but I was just wondering what you think stops men from going to the doctor.
Is it a thing that's hardwired into our DNA, Jonathan?
I'd like to say it's getting better, and I think it is, and this survey showed that more men want healthy options, even though they're driving a van and you tend to see them with sort of messy food across the front. You know, we have a perception of
it. It's not a safe driving thing if you're trying to actually have a three-course meal or a sandwich whilst you're on a motorway. Don't do it.
No. The thing is, however, if you spoke, and let's talk about testicular cancer, if you spoke to a cancer specialist or just a doctor, they would say generally men present cancer later than women. So that suggests we put it off even more than women who may be putting it off.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the message is quite clearly, check it, get it sorted, go from that point of view, and happiness will ensue. Best place to go to for further details, presumably mercedesbenz.co.uk/vans. Is that the best way to go? And obviously go to the Blue Ribbon Foundation for your own connection, Jonathan, as well.
Absolutely. And may I add, particularly on testicular cancer, that the incidence of testicular cancer has doubled in the last 20 years.
Mm. Something which we need to manage, we need to sort through, and I think today, hopefully, with the fantastic work you're doing across other stations as well, that will at least begin to raise that package. I have to mention, Alan, that the sense of despair with Middlesbrough Football Club currently with respect to the playoff situation, I don't know. Can you shed any sort of joy, or is it a case of it's going to be Derby County, it's going to be my club, it won't be Bristol City, or will Bury get into the playoffs? Any final thought?
Well, I think Borough obviously have had a, you know, they've picked up recently in terms of they've had a couple of results before that they've had a little bit of a wobble. But
apart from Nottingham Forest, we won't talk about that.
Yeah, cause I know. That was a
calamity.
But I hope so. Because obviously my son is there at Middlesbrough.
Yeah.
I've got, you know, I was up there during the season to speak to Tony. I've got a good friend there in terms of Jonathan Gould, who's the goalkeeping coach. So I certainly hope so. And fingers crossed.
Alan, we can wish for no more. I'll pass that on to the voice of the fans, Rob Nichols, when he's in the studio later on today.
Thank you.
That Alan Stubbs is on our side. There is hope at the end of the tunnel. Fantastic. Alan Stubbs and Jonathan Prince, MBE, many thanks indeed. Take care, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Party girls, don't get hurt, can't feel anything. When will I learn? I push it down, push it down. I'm the one for a good time call, phone's blowing up. Ring on my doorbell, I feel the love, feel the love. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 3. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 3. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 3. Turn back till I lose ground.
Sia probably celebrating by swinging from a chandelier. Well, whatever. Over half of British people believe that celebrating abroad makes an event feel even more special. 57% spend big on big occasions, and 43% of married Brits would also redo their hen or stag do if given the chance. Well, who better to talk about when we're talking celebration than two awesome individuals? First of all, presenter extraordinaire and diversity dancer. Well, he's a winner in every sense of the word. It's Jordan Banjo. How are you, Jordan?
That was quite an intro, Alex. Thank you very much, mate.
We call them as we see them, Jordan. That's the important thing. And also, marketing director extraordinaire at James Villas. That would be Susie White. How are you, Susie?
I am good. And again, thank you for the amazing intro.
Perfectly okay, Susie. Now, were there any surprises in this research? I mean, the fact that as British folk, we think, oh, it might have been a bit sunny over the Easter period, but it's been pouring down with rain. We want to go abroad and celebrate abroad.
I don't think you can be surprised by that research at all, to be honest, Alex. I mean, when you think about it, you speak to anyone in England, you're walking around, you're chatting to friends, family, work colleagues, it's always, I can't wait for a holiday, or I've booked this holiday, I'm really looking forward to it, or I'm looking to book here, or I'm looking to book there. So I think the research just kind of reflects exactly what we already know.
And Susie, when you're not doing outstanding work with respect to the company, are you always sort of secretly thinking, yeah, it's all very well being marketing director, but I really fancy getting off to the Canary Islands again?
Oh, do you know what? Life is one big holiday for me. Any excuse to go away. And again, akin to the research, opening of an envelope, a new carpet like we were talking about
wow.
earlier. You know, there's I think Brits, in, you know, it's our psyche to celebrate. We do celebrations really well. Look at the royal weddings, look at the Olympics. You know, we're gearing up for another royal baby as well. It's in our psyche and DNA, A, to celebrate, but B, to chase the sun. So that's absolutely me. And any excuse to go on holiday, I'm there.
So hen do's, stag do's, and so on, have they evolved over the years? I mean, I suppose the various changes in terms of that, and there were various times where you go over to an Eastern European country and get completely pie-eyed. Or you think, are we moving more sensibly to those kind of things? I mean, what's the sort of general vibe as far as that's concerned?
Pie-eyed. I like that.
Right, yeah.
That's a very nice way of putting it. Yeah, I just feel like the attitude towards stag do's and hen do's have kind of shifted a little bit. You know, I'm kind of at the age now where, like, loads of my friends are starting to get married. So I'm 26, some of my friends are my age, a little bit older, so they're all getting married, you know, making that kind of decision in their life now. And when they're doing it, what I've noticed is that quite a few of them are just going away together, you know, spending that time with family and friends rather than, you know, thinking, how drunk can I get and maybe wake up with a tattoo on my face? It's not all about that anymore. The attitude's kind of shifted to spending that quality time. And I was talking to Susie earlier, she made such a good point when she said, like, as a nation, as people, we're quite time poor. We're always trying to cram everything in. So to spend that quality time together before that big day, which is always going to be stressful, I just feel like that's the sort of move people are making now.
In the studio we have a wonderful Emily Hartley, who's an undergraduate at Trinity All Saints University in Leeds. I mean, students, I gather from my time at the University of Lincoln, of course, love any excuse for a celebration. You hand in an essay, let's celebrate and party. Any thoughts about what you've been listening to today, Emily?
Yeah, it's quite similar at Leeds, actually. I was just thinking, like, is it the same in other countries, or do you think it's just a British thing?
Yeah. Is it just a British thing, Susie?
I think, you know, as human beings, we've evolved to celebrate, whether it's celebrating an empire, whether it's celebrating a wedding. So I don't think it's just...
Coming into Europe, going out of Europe, going back into Europe again, who knows?
Yeah, exactly. Who knows? Who knows? But I do. As I said before, I do think it is within our psyche where we're ceremonial. We are a monarchy. It's how we have evolved as a nation. So I think it's specific to Brits, but I think as human beings, we do like an excuse to party.
And on that note as well, like following on what Susie just said, I feel like if you look at the research that James Villiers did, you kind of see that it's not just about the sun. It's about making memories and having that experience, which is why you can go to beautiful places in the world. Like I spent a while in Australia at the Gold Coast, and people, that is absolutely beautiful. Beaches, the weather, but even though they love what they've got, they also want to go and experience new things. So some people, you're from London, I'd love to go to London, I'd love to go and visit England. And I'm like, it's not like this, it's not as beautiful as this, but, you know, they just want to experience new things.
Yeah. In terms of finding out further information, where would you point people, Susie?
I would point people to our website, which is jamesvillers.co.uk.
Makes perfect sense. And actually, yesterday, Jordan, we were doing an external location report from the North of England Horticultural Society's Spring Flower Show, and they had a theme of curb couture with flower bombing and street dances and so on. And they all said, actually, ultimately, these street dancers, they were really looking up to become as awesome as diversity, you see. So your legacy continues.
Thank you very much. That works on that basis.
Jordan Banjo and Susie White, many thanks indeed. Hopefully we'll speak again very soon. Take care now.
Thanks, guys.
To actually ask our diversity chap, does he refer to all his interviewers as dude? But what the hey, it's Jordan Banjo. And I suspect he might have actually been quite happy with the musical choice there of Celebrate Cool and the Gang. It's Channel 1 for Hospedia, and that's why if you're listening to Channel 1 Hospedia at the James Cook University Hospital, you're getting completely free of charge the James Cook University Hospital's official radio service, Southside Broadcasting. If you missed any of the pieces that we've done so far together with Alan Stubbs, must remember Emily to actually pass on Alan's details to Rob Nichols. He'd be pleased with it. It'll help, you know. And I mean, we're going to be joined as well by I was going to say Craig for a moment there. I said names are sort of slipping away from all sorts of ways there. Is it Jack Cochran is coming on, and Jack, as we know, massive Borough fan. I mean, you know how hard Richard Piers Rayner had to work to get him to sort of think in any way positive. And Richard, of course, was absolutely right. He got the prediction right. Middlesbrough sort of won. They beat Hull, all was fine from that. But I think after the Nottingham Forest result, they'll be down again. So I think we need to just be gentle with Jack when he comes into the studio in about half an hour or so from now. And as I say, if you've missed any other bits and pieces, you can go to southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com and listen to all of these things again. They'll be up very shortly. Up next, it's a marathon runner, Gary Taylor, who was diagnosed with a rare tumour in his neck in 2016, which means that he'll be the only one who'll be competing in this year's London Marathon, of course, coming up in a matter of days. One of 40,000 runners that he'll be competing, and he'll be basically not having any food or water. He'll actually be carrying a specialist backpack and feeding pump to deliver a special blend of nutrients, water and electrolytes. Now, as we were saying whilst Cool and the Gang were actually playing, I think it's fair to say, Emily, I thought you might be a marathon girl. I thought you might be doing it.
No, I don't.
I mean, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. I know Rob Nichols, joining us later, he has actually done half marathons before, very much up for that sort of things. Personally, I've never quite seen the point.
I just don't think I could.
No. Anyway, that's another line, etc. But we'll be talking with Gary Taylor and, of course, the head of nursing at Nutritia, Catherine Shakespeare, who will be talking about the opportunities that are provided by that whole system. And then coming up in about 20 minutes or so from now, Alison Okervey will be joining us. Alison is currently the Waitrose food editor, and she'll be talking about how British folk have admitted that they take secret cooking shortcuts in the kitchen. Half of people admit to using shortcuts in their weekday meals, and by shortcuts we're looking at really changing dishes, cooking times, making simplicity. I mean, yeah, we should go back to beans on toast. I mean, I don't know what was wrong with respect to that, but you're not a beans on toast fan.
I don't like baked beans.
150 years Heinz are celebrating this year, as we found out. 150 years. And there we are, but obviously bucking the trend. An undergraduate student who does not like baked beans.
I'm not a fussy eater, just baked beans aren't for me.
Makes perfect sense.
Strokes affect 130,000 people in England and Wales each year. Here's a recipe that can dramatically decrease your chances of strokes.
Excellent. I better get a pen.
167 grams of calcium.
Hang on.
Slow down. And one tablespoon. Remember, any more than one tablespoon could kill you. Any less than one tablespoon could kill you.
Right, what was
and
the recipe?
That's the recipe.
Oh,
if you would like a more simple solution, you can always call Pharma Nord on 01670 519989.
All right.
Or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
Let me see if I can jot that down. What was the number again?
01670 519989. Or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
And how do you spell Pharma Nord, I wonder?
pharmanord.co.uk.
It's almost as if I'm having a conversation with the radio.
Don't be silly, that's impossible.
Pharma Nord, winning the war of nutrition.
You're listening to a Southside Broadcasting podcast. Southside Broadcasting is a media company which aims to provide a wide range of features from the rural, health and lifestyle worlds. You can regularly listen to entertaining podcasts with interviews and correspondence from Los Angeles, Nashville, New York and London. you can take part in our Book of the Month features, grab some great nutritional advice, enjoy broadcasts from the Great Yorkshire Show, the Lincolnshire Show, and enjoy local football reviews with our regular feature, Fly Me to the Moon. You can even hear a BAFTA award-winning director drive a train full of teddy bears. You can listen to these and many more podcasts at southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. For further information on how you can join over 35,000 people who regularly download our podcasts, call us on 01642 854 742 or email info@southsidebroadcasting.com now.
Don't you is a blue shoots up through the stony ground. There's no room, no space to rent in this town. You're out of luck, and the reason that you had to care, the traffic is stuck, and you're not moving anywhere. You thought you found a friend to take you out of this place, someone you can lend a hand in return for grace. It's a beautiful.
Sure, it will be a beautiful day when the London Marathon comes around again, especially for our next extra special guest, the awesomely talented and indefatigable fantastic individual who is Gary Taylor. Good morning, Gary. How are you?
Good morning.
Excellent. Well, good to hear you, Gary. And what an inspiration. I mean, this notion of actually running the London Marathon without food or water, what can I say? I mean, hats off to you. In the studio, we have Emily, and both Emily and myself are saying we probably wouldn't even do a marathon, let alone do it without food or water. So great, great stuff there. Talk us through your story, because it is such an inspirational one. I mean, I'm sure that Spielberg and the Hollywood movie makers will be saying, we must make the movie of this, of Gary's life. This is phenomenal.
Well, going back to 2016, I got diagnosed with a rare tumour called a swollenoma, which were growing in my neck, and it slowly were cutting my airway off. So they had to get me in to remove it, and unfortunately, it left me unable to eat and drink.
Mm.
And obviously, my left vocal cords
sure.
being paralysed.
Sure.
And I've had numerous operations.
Yeah. Now, in terms of, because clearly we say you're doing the London Marathon without food or water, you will still actually have a whole blend of nutrients, water and electrolytes that'll be needed to work through that. So would you just like to share with us what your kind of, in a sense, replacement supplement will actually be?
Well, I'll be using electrolytes to pump, it gets pumped into me with a machine in my backpack. And that will keep me hydrated throughout the marathon. But I need to swap my bag about 3 or 4 times because I can't manage with one bag.
Sure,
not enough
sure,
fluid.
Absolutely. It's 26.2 miles in terms of actual. I mean, what first, were you a marathon runner before the surgery? I mean, or was it a case of this is something you decided to do afterwards?
No, I wouldn't say I'm a marathon runner. I've always wanted to run the marathon, so I've been trained for about 5 years before, but never run a marathon in my life until last year.
Well, I mean, and again, what was the feeling when you actually completed it? Was it a case of, well, there we are, I knew I could do it. That's the power of the humanity.
I was over the moon, really, and thought, I've done this. I can prove you don't have to, put yourself down in this situation. You can do things.
The only limits are the limits we set ourselves, perhaps.
Indeed.
Now, I mean, it's good enough that you're doing the London Marathon, but I see that you're looking to do Boston, New York, Chicago, Berlin and Tokyo. There's going to be no stopping you, Gary.
Hopefully not, no. Now we've got the London out at way, let's go around and do them all.
I mean, I'm overwhelmed. Emily, thoughts from yourself? Speechless, you say?
Yeah, I am. I don't think I could do half a marathon.
Let's go more to your condition, Gary. I mean, for others who are maybe listening to this and they're at the James Cook University Hospital and maybe they're dealing with feeding tubes and they might think, oh, we don't know what to do. What advice would you give them, Gary?
Well, to stay positive is the main advice. Mm. Never give up on your dreams. You know, take one step at a time and you can achieve, your goals in life.
And is it a case of taking small steps? Because, I mean, actually getting yourself to the point where actually you felt you could do the marathon in the first place was something which, many people would actually... the tendency might well be, again, with other folk who perhaps might sort of think, oh, it's all over, just give up now. And that's probably the last thing you should ever do. You always need to keep moving forward, perhaps.
You do need to keep moving forward. Small steps, definitely, at the start. Be positive.
I mean, looking at the actual piece itself, meaning, when you were told that you were unable to eat or drink normally for 6 weeks, you would need to be fed through tubes and various other bits and pieces. Is it something that, in terms of how things developed, and you think about, obviously, the Gary pre-operation, Gary post-operation, etc., that actually there's a way in which you feel that, although it seemed as though it was one hell of a trial, it's actually made you a stronger person?
It's definitely changed the way I feel about life now. Mm. And I am stronger in myself, and I believe, I can do more or less anything I set my mind to.
Well, I think anybody who's listening to this certainly would be keen to obviously get that whole story recorded for posterity. Well, it's posterity, it's just an inspiration in every sense of the word from that point of view. What next, after you've done all the marathons? Would you be doing the Gobi Desert?
Well, you never know, that might be on the radar soon.
Lord, it's phenomenal. Gary, it's been amazing sharing some thoughts with yourself. Let's talk just finally a little thing about Nutricia, Nutricia. Presumably that would be a good place to check out online if people are wanting to find out further information about this. Or do you have a website yourself for your own particular story?
I haven't got a website as yet, but do go to Nutricia and get more information from there.
And then Nutricia, as in Nutricia, Nutricia, it'll work through that. Gary, our hats are metaphorically and literally off to your good self. All the very best. Good luck with respect to this. I mean, the next thing is, are you going to be winning it now? I mean, will that be a case of, or is it just a case of, no, I'm just going to take part? I'm sure you'll be able to actually beat the fancy dress people anyway.
Hopefully I'll be able to. I've got my target set for under 4 hours, so that's the aim.
As you can tell, I'm joining Emily in this speechless nature of doing the London Marathon, over 10 miles, and doing it in under 4 hours. Gary, a round of applause for Gary Taylor, please. Absolutely fantastic stuff. So take care. And the very best of luck. Take care now.
Thank you very much.
I'll sing it one last time for you. Then we really have to. Been the only thing that's right in all I've
Whether Leona Lewis and Run would be the best soundtrack to actually have for Gary Taylor, because it's a bit slow. But I mean, I suppose steady pace, though. I was thinking more, a bit more beats to do with the running, but I don't know, whatever. Gary Taylor, a true superhero. Up next, Alison Okavy, the Waitrose food editor, who'll be talking again about some ways of taking some shortcuts to recipes, shortcuts in the kitchen, and more. And then two amazing podcasts and programs that you hear first and foremost here on Channel One for Auspedia at the James Cook University Hospital, courtesy of South Side Broadcasting. We have the latest edition of Fly Me to the Moon. Is it going to be the last Fly Me to the Moon of the season? Who knows? Playoffs could still be a possibility. And we've got Book of the Month with Jenny Finch as well. That's to come on Southside Broadcasting, plus some great music like this.
I've got a lot of money. Caught in a rat race, terminally. I'm a professional cynic, but my heart's not in it. I'm paying the price of living life at the limit. Caught up in centuries, anxiety. Yes, the craze on hell. It's getting bad, trying to survive. Lives in a house, very big house in the country. Watching afternoon repeats and the permeates in your country. He takes a manner of pills and piles up analyst bills in the country. Oh, it's like an animal farm, that's a rural charm in the country. He's got morning glory and life's a different story. Everything's going Jack and Jory. In touch with his own mortality. And looking bad clothes, it's a helping hand that makes you feel well as you're blind. Oh, it's a century's remedy for the pain that haunts. Start trying simple. Lives in a house, a very big house in the country. He's got a bug in his chest, so he needs a lot of rest in the country. He doesn't drink, smoke, laugh, takes herbal baths in the country. Yes, you come to no harm on the animal farm in the country. In the country. In the country.
And if you're living in the country, you may well have lots of country recipes as well. Oh, that's a cliche. Don't worry, we've got Cheese and Onions by the Ruttles coming up shortly. But when you have a survey that suggests that half of people in Britain have admitted to using shortcuts in their weekday meals, with 30% admitting to using shortcuts when cooking for a dinner party, well, the only person you can really talk to find out what's happening with the state of the nation and secret cooking shortcuts in the kitchen, who better than Waitrose food editor extraordinaire? It's Alison Oakerby. How are you, Alison?
Hello, I'm well, thank you.
Excellent. Delighted to touch base with your good self. Now, this particular research, commissioned, of course, by Waitrose and Partners, suggests that while just over half of Brits say they cook from scratch at least four times a week, many want to make their food as quickly as possible. We've got a few folk in the studio, so two of them are actually undergraduates, and one's already said they don't like beans on toast, so I haven't known these will go. But Emily, do you take shortcuts in the kitchen?
Yeah, I mean, at university, my meal plan's basically chicken goujons or pot noodles.
Well, there you are. You've already got a pre-prepared shortcut there with chicken goujons.
Yep.
Straight in there, Alison. She shoots, she scores. Jack Cochran, what about life at Staffordshire?
No, normally cook from fresh. I always have done. It's
And you're heading off to China as well shortly, yeah, so clearly you're gearing up for that. So Jack polishing his halo from that point of view. And ace crime writer Jenny Finch. Jenny, are you a regular cooker in the kitchen?
Yes, I am. Mm.
Alison, were you surprised by this whole system? I mean, you mentioned the chicken goujon system from that point of view. Is it just something that's British that somehow, in many cases, we just lack confidence?
I think it's more that people haven't got time. People are in a hurry to get dinner. They come home from work, they want dinner on the table in 30 minutes or less, and they want to get on with their evening after they've eaten. So anything we can do to still cook but get it on the table quicker is what we're looking for.
We were talking with our food historian in the early part of the morning about how Heinz are now celebrating 150 years since, of course, they started launching their first of the 57 varieties and so on and so forth. Is it a case of the notion of pre-packed packages and so on, and, of course, trends such as veganism and so on? I'm sorry if you believe it's more than it's a lifestyle choice. It's not just a trend. Are those things sort of becoming intrinsically part of the British culture, and many people actually, well, I'd like to be vegan, but I just find the recipe so boring or whatever.
I think there's an element of that. People are looking for lighter, healthier cooking methods in their food, and that also does mean for some giving up meat entirely or just one or two nights a week.
Yeah, well, I know Polly Russell, our food historian, was very keen to address that. I'm very sensitive, obviously, when we start talking about veganism with Waitrose, because the last poster we started with got involved with that. There's a whole nightmare there. It's all right. We still love you, William. Don't worry. It's all important. From your own perspective, though, what tips can you actually offer, say, the folks such as Emily? Well, Jack doesn't seem as though you need any tips from that point of view, and Jenny, I think, always seems to have everything sorted when it comes to matters nutritional. But for our listeners' point of view, what would you say would be the best shortcut to take when you're sort of preparing weekday meals?
So for weekday meals, if you there's the basic of pre-chopped vegetables. So if you're somebody who cries a lot when they're chopping onions, rather than buy them frozen, pre-chopped, or fresh, pre-chopped, and use them straight from the bag. Or the thing I think is a little hero is salad dressings. There's some really good flavors out there. There's you might have lime and coriander and chili in a dressing, but we kind of always just think it's only for leaves. But you can use that to finish a dish. It might be prawns and pasta, or mixing a French dressing with marmalade for a gammon glaze. And that just saves, 5 minutes of prep time.
Hmm. Does that chime with your own experience, Jack?
I've never tried it. It definitely sounds interesting. Hmm.
I tend to prefer my salads without salad dressing on, personally. I prefer, you have your garden salad and you don't want any sort of dressing on it. It's just bad. Emily, any thoughts for yourself?
I don't really use salad dressings. Oh. I usually just have lettuce and carrots.
Jenny, given obviously your passion for matters francaise and so on, any sort of areas that you'd sort of offer in terms of shortcuts that you've developed over the years?
We have a very good butcher, which means that we can get particular cuts of meat that save a lot of time. I tend to prepare all the vegetables fresh. I have to be very careful about prepackaged things because I'm badly allergic to eggs, and eggs lurk in so many different things in so many different forms. I tend to avoid anything unless I've read all the ingredients on it.
Particularly given a little feature we did about the propensity of anaphylactic shock and nuts and eggs and so on. I mean, is that again something obviously people need to be aware of, Polly, Alison, from your own sort of perspective on this?
Yeah, of course, if you've got any allergy, you do need to check the packaging.
Mm. Anyway, moving on. I suggest that in terms of developing these sort of areas, pre-chopped, frozen, tinned vegetables and so on and so forth, is there something about maybe scrapping the whole thing, saying we want to actually take more time, we want to be more mindful in terms of our consumption, and it's all too speedy when we start sort of getting all these shortcuts, Meals should take at least 4 hours to prepare.
But that's fine for the weekend. It swings and balances. You've got time at the weekend. You can do long, complicated recipes where you're making the stock and sauces and reducing it down. But if you've only got half an hour to get dinner on the table, then, you know, getting someone else to do that legwork and you just building from that just saves time.
See, quite clearly, Alison, once again, you've actually taken the line of cutting me to the quick on quite rightly so for that money. And I appreciate that. It's okay. I'm a man, I can cope with that,
other,
I hope.
But the other thing that is good is, you know, things like canned beans and pulses, you know, normally you'd have to soak them overnight and have them cooked the following morning. Lots of people don't know what they're going to have for dinner at lunchtime tonight. You know, at lunchtime today, they won't know what they're going to cook for dinner. So if you've got a can of already cooked beans, not just Heinz beans, but...
other beans are available, obviously. Waitrose probably have their own brand of beans, I'm
sure.
Yeah,
or kidney beans or lentils or something like that that you can just drain and use straight from the tin, then that just is just a nice, quick and easy timekeeping. I mean, nobody thinks of chopped tomatoes as a shortcut, but they are.
Although it has to be said, as we identified, Emily, not a fan of beans. The beans.
Not for me.
No. What about chickpeas?
Chickpeas?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like chickpeas.
There we are.
You see, you've sorted the magical thing out. Alison, where can people find out more about Beautifully Simple Recipes?
Beautifully Simple Recipes. If you go into Branch, there's all the ingredients together in the fridge, and you can buy the ingredients and pick up a recipe card, or you can go online on waitrose.com/beautifully-simple.
And that is why I'm sure that if he's... And he might well be listening to this, because I know he's doing all sorts of other bits and pieces where he's not writing for a fine magazine over the... Oh, well, he has a Quaker column in the Telegraph now. William Sitwell will be proud, Alison, with the kind of the legacy that's been maintained from that point of view. So it's good that you've maintained that classic work with respect to Waitrose. Waitrose.com, a good go-to place. Two final questions. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today? Alison, has it been good for you, Alison?
Oh, it's been great, thank you.
Has the audio nutrition element been quite positive? That's important.
Yeah, I've loved it. Thanks very much.
Good, so hopefully we can come to connect with you again in the very near future. Will you return?
I'd love to.
Hurrah!
Yes,
and as promised, cheese and onions.